Hi, welcome to another Writers After Dark. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are here because good stories start with the writers, since wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And my guests today are a tag team of women who are deep, deep fans of horror, and this brings joy to my heart. I'd like to welcome Meg Hafdahl and Kelly Florence. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And Meg and Kelly are responsible for a really, really intriguing series, The Science of, and pick a topic. We have monsters, women in horror, Stephen King, serial killers, and the new books coming up this year and next year are Witchcraft and Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. the book that was newly released or newest to be released is the serial killers one, correct?
Correct. It came out last October, so October 2021. Perfect for spooky season.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So The Science of Stephen King was a massive tome. It crashed Kindle on my iPad.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It was an old version, an old iPad, like I don't know, generation two, and it was telling me, "Put me out to pasture now. I can't handle this." I'm like, fine.
Oh. Yeah. It was time.
But yeah, it was. I was milking it for as long as I could.
Yep.
And Stephen King said, not anymore. Smash. But yeah, these are the one that caught my eye. The one that I first became aware of was Women in Horror.
Yeah.
And The Science of Women in Horror, The Science of Monsters. That's my wheelhouse. That's stuff that I love because monster movies are my favorite. Absolute favorite. And then after that, it's like psychological horror. But talk about how this series got started and if there is a method to the madness of picking which topic comes next.
It's fascinating because we grew up separately. We didn't meet until we were in our late teens, early 20s, but we both grew up loving scary things. And I remember we grew up in the era of Blockbuster. So I was going to my local video store, Meg was going to Blockbuster, and we would pick out, as you mentioned, those monster movies. We were drawn to them as little kids, and that was unique. Neither of us had a horror movie fan friend growing up, and so when we met each other, it was like we had this instant bond, and we clicked because we loved all things horror.
Yeah, I remember one of my favorite movies growing up was Dawn of the Dead, the sequel to Night of Living Dead. Mm-hmm. And I had never seen Day of the Dead. And one of the first things we did together, Kelly's like, come over to my house and watch Day of the Dead. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be my best friend for life. She had access to that VHS. So I was writing fiction and I write horror fiction, but then we came up with the Horror Rewind podcast, which we've been doing for 5 years. And that is really just a very casual podcast where we talk about what we love, and which of course is horror movies and shows and books. And that's kind of where the books started.
We noticed that every week when we were talking about a horror movie, we were each separately doing our own research about the real history, folklore, the science, the psychology that inspired that horror movie or TV show. And so we're like, hey, we need to share this with the world in more than this. And so we started with monsters. As you said, we love monsters and monster movies. And that was the natural start.
Nice. Yeah, because I always considered myself a science fiction fan first. But then I remembered the first movie I saw that wasn't a Disney movie for kids in the theaters was Jaws, and I was all of 10.
Yeah.
Seeing that shark on the big screen, I was like, oh my god, this is awesome. And the monster movies or the horror movies came in very quick succession after that. You know, we have It's Alive, It Lives Again, The Omen, just that visceral fear
Yeah.
That gets kindled in your, I guess, the back part of your brain when you're sitting in the dark with a whole bunch of other people waiting to be scared. There's something glorious about that. And even though I like that I have more access to horror movies on streaming, I miss that sitting in the dark watching something on a huge screen. But you said you do a lot of research, but you know, before you start talking about something on the podcast, when you're done talking about it for the podcast, do you just sort of, you know, nudge each other and go, hey, we have to dig deeper in this because this is cool?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a lot of movies that we've watched or introduced each other to. And then it's like, okay, this could be an entire book on itself. Maybe we'll end up just writing a chapter on it. But we find the things that interest us, and then we do the research in order to understand it enough to give it back to our readers in a fun and approachable way.
Yeah, it's important. Like I like to say, you know, we're not scientists. We come from a background of literature and film studies and communication, theater, things like that. And that's why I think it's kind of important that we tackle the science of, because we're not like the preeminent experts on, you know, genealogy or anything. We are just people who are fascinated by this and want to learn more. And so that's how we make it fun and approachable. It's like, we're not getting into these really, really like crazy concepts and you're reading pages of like numbers or something. Yeah, we want it to be fun.
It's not a dissertation. Yeah. And that's the fun part too, is that we get to interview experts and get to hear from their perspective. You know, how true is this concept in a horror movie? And sometimes it gets debunked, but most of the time we find out that truth is scarier than fiction.
Okay, so for the monsters, the science of monsters, what did you find out about, I don't know, let's go with the top ones, zombies, werewolves, and vampires.
So I was going to say, the thing that surprised me the most, is he a zombie, a werewolf, or a vampire? No, it's Freddy Krueger. The thing that surprised us the most is that he was based on this actual thing that was happening that Wes Craven read about Hmong immigrants. They were fleeing Laos during the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. or after the Vietnam War, and a large number of them were dying in their sleep. And they thought it was because of this demon, a sleep demon called the Dacha. And medical experts looked into it, though, and concluded that they were dying from a combination of sudden, unexplained nocturnal death syndrome and cardiac arrhythmia. But Wes Craven read this and said, what if there actually was a monster killing people in their dreams, in their sleep? And that's how Freddy Krueger was born. And so, you know, knowing that there's this real history and medical condition and science behind that sort of, I mean, no offense to Freddy Krueger, but he's kind of a ridiculous character. You know, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I know for me, I really like psychological stuff. Mm-hmm. And so an interest of mine since I was a teenager was reading about dissociative identity disorder. Some people, it's called multiple personality disorder, like, you know, colloquially, but the way to say it is DID. And we interviewed a psychiatrist at the Mayo Clinic, very esteemed. And he's like, oh yeah, that doesn't exist. And that was really interesting for me. We were doing it in terms of talking about Norman Bates and things like that. And it was kind of interesting to have that debunked. And I know we've even presented on it, and I've had people come up to me and go, yeah, it is a real thing, and kind of back and forth. But, you know, this particular doctor said, nope, doesn't exist. And so that was kind of an interesting thing that we learned. And that's the thing. You kind of like come up against these people. We've talked to people who, you know, are ghost people, and they are out there with their equipment looking for ghosts. And then you talk to people who are very skeptical and don't believe in things like that. And so we try to bring kind of all of it into the book. So let the reader decide.
Interesting. Because I always thought, you know, dissociative identity disorder was a thing.
Yeah. Apparently it got taken out of the DSM.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating because I read all those books, like Three Faces of Eve and Sybil and stuff, mm-hmm. when I was a teenager, because I just thought, I mean, this is more fascinating than anything in the world. And so I don't know. I'm still kind of like, it's still kind of a sore spot because I'm like, I don't know. But you know, that's what we go to the experts for.
So what do they call people who have demonstrably multiple personalities? I mean, that doesn't fall under like a schizoaffective disorder.
It must have some umbrella, you know, term they use now. I'm not sure, but those are the roads you go down. And it was fun because we asked him too, like, oh, what would you do with Norman Bates if you saw him now?
If he was your patient.
Yeah, if he was your patient, you know. So there's fun stuff like that we talk about. And, you know, our serial killers book, we do focus on serial killer movies in that book, but, you know, that one was a little tougher for interviews wise because, you know, we want to be victim focused and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. and we still want to have the fun. But yeah, with monsters, we got to ask some really fun questions. Like how would a zombie actually decompose? That was really fun.
I mean, seriously, Jekyll and Hyde is right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I know.
Oh goodness. Yeah. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of monsters, and I'm waiting to get a copy of Science of Monsters to just literally pour through it with eager curiosity. In The Science of Women in Horror, that's more of a look at the women who helped make the horror entertainment that we like. Is that correct?
Yeah, and also looking at the tropes that women have been portrayed as in horror movies throughout time. So the mother figure, an innocent, the Gorgon, the sexy woman, the kick-ass woman, you know, all of the different types and how they're represented, how women are represented in horror films. And then of course, as you mentioned, the women who started the genre, like Mary Shelley, and the women currently working today in the industry.
Who did you get to talk to for that book? Or did you find enough people to chat with?
Oh, we got to talk to Dee Wallace. That was really cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got to talk to Alice Lowe, who she made the film Prevenge that was on Shudder. And she wrote, directed, and starred in it when she was 9 months pregnant. So that just an amazing human being. And who else did we talk to? So many people.
Yeah, lots of filmmakers. And the thing that we were fascinated by was we learned through our research through the Gina Davis Institute that women speak more in horror movies than any other genre, almost as much or more than romantic comedies even, or romances. And so horror, even though, you know, some people might think, well, it's guys focused, guys like it. Women get to oftentimes be the final girl and be shown in a variety of different ways as we focus on throughout that book. And yeah, they get a lot of screen time and speaking time.
And there are a lot of women who have written or directed successful horror movies. So you have a lot of films that I don't want to sound bitter or petty, but you have a lot of stories in film where the women's perspective is taken more seriously and handled more realistically.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate. Sometimes Kelly and I come across people who, when you say horror, a lot of times they think of a misogynistic slasher. That's their only kind of like, mm-hmm. sort of, that's the only thing that comes to their mind. And it's so much more than that. And there's so many amazing female characters in horror that I know I empathize with and I wanted to be when I was growing up. You know, I wanted to be Lydia Deetz. And so, yeah, this book, we call it our feminist manifesto because we get to talk about why we love horror. And of course, there are elements that can always be better. But it really is a female genre, I believe.
And mentioning characters, even Wendy in The Shining, I know some people like to make fun of how she handled the situation or her character, but really she is a strong woman and she survives the entire movie and she is dealing with ghosts, an alcoholic husband who has lost his marbles, and this entire hotel. She's single-handedly taking care of everything. She's a hero.
Yeah, she gets her boy out. I mean, yeah, people like to make fun of how she holds a bat, but I think she's pretty fierce.
Yeah, I think I love reading nonfiction or academic examinations of science fiction and horror. And there was a book that came out, I'm going to say 4 years ago, maybe. It was about Near Dark. I mean, a complete academic breakdown.
Cool. Of love that the movie.
Near Dark. And that was a lot of fun. It's actually part of the British Film Institute film classic series. What's it called? It is actually just called Near Dark. And yes, for our listeners, it's by Stacey Abbott. And my interview with her is on Slice of Sci-Fi. So
nice.
Check it out. But yeah, I am envious of how much fun you guys must have had putting together the Women in Horror series. And is there enough material to do a follow-up?
Oh, absolutely. Every day we are hearing new content that's coming out, watching new content written by women, about women, directed by women. And it's so exciting. And I feel like it's just sort of exploding. We have met so many other female identifying directors and writers in the past, you know, since we wrote that book. We definitely have a mountain of content.
Yeah, we could, for sure.
There's an anthology out there called X.
Oh yeah, that's
that. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still on Shudder or not, but I would watch that again. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, I agree.
One of your other books before we get to serial killers is The Science of Stephen King. Where did that idea come from?
I mean, it kind of was a natural thing for us as, you know, growing up, you know, when he was really in his heyday, so to speak. We both found Stephen King books in our parents' houses and started reading them. I know my first one was Carrie.
And I watched The Shining when I was in first grade. It was it was an edited for TV version. So I'm just going to say my parents were terrible. But, you know, I loved horror already at that age. And so then when I was old enough to start reading the books, I think, I can't remember now. I think actually I read the second book in the Dark Tower series. And then I had to go back and read The Gunslinger. But yeah. We just both love Stephen King. We love him so much. We have matching the Grady girls on our arms. It's from The Shining. We have tattoos. And when we stand next to each other, they hold hands. But it was just this natural thing. We both have loved his books and film adaptations all of our lives. And so we couldn't wait to explore not only his books and the science behind them, but also get into his biography and learn what was happening in the world at the time in his life that inspired him to write these stories.
Yeah, I really like linking up sort of like his biography and what books he was writing at the time. I thought that was really interesting to sort of like see where he was on his, you know, sobriety journey, where he was with having kids, all those kind of things, and like how it made sense in what he was writing. So that was kind of a fun new challenge that we hadn't had before.
Was there special attention paid to sort of an era of his or a particular handful of novels of his that were your favorites?
What we decided to do is go chronologically. And again, there could be another volume or two of his work because he writes so much. Yeah. There's he's written more, you know, since this has been published, but we decided we're going to pick out the ones that speak to us the most and, you know, just delve into it chronologically so that we could pay attention to that biography of his.
Yeah. And I know, like, for me, I kind of ended up having some new favorites. Like, I had read The Dark Half before, which is not one of his more famous books. But after reading it again for the book research and doing the science research and also understanding where he was in his life and sort of trying to like get rid of this sort of bad side of himself, which was drugs and alcohol. It just like brought it to a whole new level to me. And like, I appreciate that book so much more now. So that's what we're hoping, is that people who like Stephen King, they're going to read this and just appreciate his work even more. And people who have never read Stephen King, you know, can read this too and start to like, you know, they should. Wouldn't it be great if you'd never read Stephen King before and you could just read it? Yes. And then read a chapter of our book after and just read chronologically. I'd love to go back and like never have read Stephen King and do that.
That would be fun. And we've also, multiple people have told us in person at events or, you know, tweeted us on online that our books have been a gateway into horror movies for them or horror books because they felt like they're too scared to go into it cold. And so they read a chapter and are able to say, okay, now I know what this is based on, how it came about, and they feel like it's a safe space, a safe way to get into it.
Nice, because I know it's funny because my two favorite Stephen King stories might not be considered horror. I love Firestarter. I love Eyes of the Dragon. Mm-hmm. Pet Sematary is right up there, but that's not a book I can reread a lot. I mean, that was the first book I ever read where I stayed up all night with the light on going, oh, yes. Shit.
Well, and I know, like, for me, I read a lot of them before I had kids, and then I read them after I had kids, and they had a different effect on me, like Pet Sematary and like It. Mm-hmm. It had a whole new kind of relevance to it that scared me more.
And I think too, that what we discovered through the research and Stephen King's life, even just seeing him reflect on being, you know, a spouse and with grown children and aging and all of those things are coming out in his writing mm-hmm. now. And what a journey to be able to follow in this prolific author and seeing how their books change over time. Mm-hmm. So speaking of which, that's also what a fun part of our newest book that we're working on, The Science of Agatha Christie. Mm-hmm. We're able to see how time and life affected those stories and storytelling.
Okay. One last question about Stephen King. Did you go into, or would you go into in another volume, how the popularity or the audience reception of the movies affected people who came to the books, you know, either right around the time the movies came out instead of when they were published?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's definitely a phenomenon that is, I don't want to say only involves Stephen King, but he's such an extreme example. And certainly, you know, we talk about, obviously, that he doesn't like the Stanley Kubrick version of his film. And a lot of people, you know, have seen that and never read his book. And but really, in this book, we try to focus on his books, which is good. It was good practice because now we're working on Agatha Christie. But yeah, I mean, the idea that people have these preconceived notions or they like this movie or that movie and they haven't read the book, I mean, that's kind of just a minor annoyance. But it's not something we get into. But yeah, that could be an interesting topic to discuss.
Mm-hmm. So the serial killers book, what did you intentionally choose to focus on with these people? Because you said you wanted to honor the victims more than glorify the monsters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we never want to put serial killers on a pedestal. And unlike fictional villains like Freddy Krueger or Jason, people can, you know, think those are fun. But these movies and these TV series and books that we researched for all of these chapters are based on real people and real events. And so it was, I think, and I think Meg agrees, the most difficult to research and write about because it was so many things are so horrific. And so we tried to focus on, okay, what science can we talk about? Who can we interview to shed light on these topics, but always be victim focused and honor them and their legacy?
Yeah, I think there's this idea that like Ted Bundy was like a genius or something, or, you know, there's this idea that's like, oh, he was so smart and clever and blah, blah, blah. No, he wasn't. I'm not going to swear right now because I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. But I mean,
you can swear, but A, he got caught. B, he got put to death. How smart was he?
Exactly. And he like tried to be his own lawyer, like, you know. So, you know, there's this idea. It's like, oh, wow, these people are sort of like an other, like they're sort of like they are these shadow men. No, they're just real people who are terrible and awful and did terrible things to people. And so, you know, we're not sitting here trying to get into a book of like, wow, this person's so cool. That's the last thing we want to do. We want to talk about the really cool people who found these people, the law enforcement. We want to talk about, you know, families of the victims. We want to talk about the victims. So, you know, we chose to even talk about unsolved murders like the Highway of Tears in British Columbia.
And there's another unsolved murder in the country of Finland, which is not known for crime at all, that happened in the 60s and it still hasn't been solved. And so that, I think that was, if we can say we had any sort of fun, quote unquote, is that we're going to look at things that maybe haven't been talked about or looked at as much.
Yeah, we knew we had to hit the big ones. And actually our editor said, you know, I really want you to get into the Golden State Killer, which is a kind of fresher, you know, one where science was used, and it's a very cool scientific concept. So, you know, we'll get feedback like that sometimes, and it's like, yeah, of course I want to get into that. But yeah, we just wanted to, this was definitely our biggest challenge yet, because we really wanted to walk that balance of making it a fun, entertaining book with cool stuff in it, but also realizing that real people are affected by this.
Yeah, I would be interested to see if there is a compendium or a collection someplace where there are linked by evidence unsolved serial killings in different countries, not just the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah,
because I think I just saw something about the unsolved murders in, was it Long Island?
Oh yeah, yep, that's awful.
And I would love to see how they linked all of these people to the same killer or you know, pair of killers, whatever, and what they're doing to try to figure out who did these and where they are. Not, like I said, not just in the U.S. and Canada. There are rumors of, you know, Russia doesn't have this. Yes, you do. Mexico doesn't have this. Yeah, you do.
Yes.
And just to keep track of where these murders, you know, these serial killers are, and what law enforcement, you know, locally or for the countries or globally are trying to do, because that to me would seem like something you'd want, you know, Interpol to keep an eye on. You know, it's like, okay, we have another murder here. It looks similar to that dude. We got to catch this guy.
Yeah, we got into it a little bit in our chapter, Wolf Creek, about serial killer in Australia, because in the outback, people's cars were breaking down because of these rough roads and people kept disappearing. And I won't spoil the movie or TV series for anyone, but it's a fascinating read and research that was based on truth and what's happening in Australia, for example.
Yeah, and you're so right. There's this idea, and obviously statistically, you're going to say that U.S. has the most serial killers, but you could also argue that we are taking the best pulse of that maybe than other countries and
keeping records
and things like that. That being said, you know, every country, you know, has their own records and their own serial killers, and they do exist everywhere. And yeah, it would be nice to just have this big database where we can catch these monsters. But, you know, that was the hopeful thing about this book, was finding that science every day is getting better and more and more of these people are getting caught.
Yeah, these crimes are being solved. And so that is definitely the silver lining to science.
Good. Now, You have a book coming up this fall, The Science of Witchcraft. And I'm guessing it covers good witches, bad witches, evil witches, and you know, the ones in between who kind of maybe are good one day and are petty the next. Who knows?
Just like how we all are.
Yeah. So a little bit of history of obviously of real folklore, legends, and cultural things that happened with people who were accused of being witches and people who claimed to be witches. And then also the films and TV shows that explore witches and witchcraft. We cover everything from The Wizard of Oz to the newest Sabrina series. And so it's old school, it's contemporary. And I will say this is definitely a palate cleanser for us because it was a lot of fun. I know there is some real history in women and men who were affected by being accused of being witches, but we had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah, right? We did. It was after the serial killers, it was kind of nice to go into sort of, I think, you know, every girl, at least on our side, at least every goth girl wanted to be a witch. You know, maybe it was like there were those girls who really wanted to be the bride, and then the girls or princess, and then there are the girls who wanted to be a witch. So it was very fun. And I know, you know, we got to explore so many fun things. We got to interview two drag queens, one of them from RuPaul's Drag Race, who has done a whole drag show based on their love of Death Becomes Her. And it was so much fun. And they have such an interesting perspective from, you know, being queer children watching that movie and what it meant to them. So that's what we love about it, is just talking to filmmakers, but also fans and people who like have all these different perspectives that we didn't even think of.
And there's also, we got to do this really cool interview with an indigenous ethnobotanist. And it was for our chapter on Sleepy Hollow, talking about the healing properties of plants. Because a lot of people say, okay, there's this witch's cauldron and they're putting all these things into the brew. But what she taught us is that there are healing properties to plants. And as a scientist and as an indigenous woman, she's bringing these two worlds together and showing that, hey, this isn't science fiction. This is real. It's based on generations of truth that have been passed down.
Yeah, the making of potions and tinctures and concoctions, that goes back to real local healing, you know, because back in the day you had a shaman, an alchemist, and a midwife, and if they couldn't fix you, you're probably gonna die.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. We are glad we live now. It's fun to fantasize about being witch back in the day, but
I mean, it seems like, you know, back in the '80s, every high school had a clique of girls who tried to make a love potion and shenanigans ensued.
And we're trying to do where you, I can't think of the game, but you lift people
light as a feather.
As a board. Yeah.
Sure.
So did you guys cover the movie The Craft?
Of course. Yeah. We talk about the sequel as well, because I think there were some interesting points to be made about the sequel and the first one. And so, yeah, we definitely touch on that. We touch on like horror movies. What is the one, The Wretched? We talked to the filmmakers of a great movie called The Wretched, which is a great horror witch movie, which of course I love. We love the horror, but it was also fun to talk about the lighter ones too.
Yeah, that's funny, because I'm thinking there's a series on Hallmark. Was it The Good Witch? I don't think there are any horror elements in that at all. It's just sort of campy, melodramatic, mildly romantic stuff. But the lead character is the witch of this one town. And what was it? There was a series that was, I guess, Freeform now, but ABC Family back in the day, the Halloween Town movies.
Witches are kind of versatile, you know, they really are. They can be really scary, but they can also be Glinda the Good Witch. So it's
and that's how we separated the book out. We talk about witches in love, and then we talk about witches from small towns, and we talk about, you know, all of the different types of witches in history, in books, in TV, in film. And like you said, they can encompass all sorts of things, all sorts of roles.
Just like women in general.
Yeah.
So when is The Science of Witchcraft coming out?
September 6th.
September 6th, just in time for Halloween.
Yes. And we're so excited because we actually get to go to Salem for a book event. Nice. There. We have a few events in Massachusetts, but we're so excited. We're going to be there in the month of October. And so we feel hashtag blessed.
Nice, nice. Now you've got another big one coming up next year, being released next year, The Science of Agatha Christie. What spawned that idea as the next author to dive into?
Yeah, well, Stephen King, our Stephen King book has been really successful, and we love the idea of kind of going back to books. In the Agatha Christie book, we're also talking about, you know, the the adaptations, the Poirot series, everything like that. But we really wanted to focus on a female author. And I'm a huge Shirley Jackson fan, so I'll probably be bothering everybody about doing that next. But we felt like oftentimes, as I was saying before, horror is kind of relegated into this idea of slashers. But Agatha Christie, I mean, that is horror. You know, that is murder every time there's somebody getting murdered around Poirot or Miss Marple or whoever. And so we want to kind of bring in those cozy mystery people into our horror world. And it's kind of a great way to sort of access some people who maybe haven't found interest in our other books while still doing something that we absolutely love, which is talking about her biography, reading her books, learning about the science behind them. So it's kind of a win-win-win.
Are there any academic or scholarly works you've looked at to sort of pick a direction where to break down analyzing her stories?
You know, for all of our books, what we do is we read the source material or watch the movie or TV show first and then go down our own rabbit hole to see where that research will lead us. And so currently, one of the very obvious directions is in a lot of Agatha Christie novels, she, whoever ends up murdering by poison. And so we were just able to interview last week a chemist in England who wrote an entire book about how realistic are these poisons that Agatha Christie wrote about, and would it work in the way that she said it would. And so that is one example of where we were able to get some direction of a very obvious route. But there have been some other interesting threads that we've pulled. For example, we also interviewed an escape room artist about, okay, there's murder mystery parties and there's escape rooms, and how do you design an escape room and write this mystery so that it's able to be solved by a group of people just there for a good time? And that is a fascinating way to look at it.
Yeah, and I know we were just doing research on her disappearance, which is very interesting. She disappeared for about 10 days, and she does not write about it. She wrote several biographies and she does not write about her disappearance in any of them. But it was like a manhunt, like nobody knew where she was situation. And so I literally was going through old articles from London and the New York Times, etc., because she didn't give us any information. I had to kind of go searching for it. So that's really fun too, to kind of see what the world was thinking then when she was missing.
Well, if you're interested in stories where lots of murders happen, the Midsummer Murders books were written by a woman, Carolyn Graham.
Oh, yes. Yes. Give me more murder.
Oh, goodness. So in researching both, I guess, Agatha and Stephen, was there something surprising that you learned? Was there something that excited you? It was like, oh my God, I didn't know this.
Since we're sort of in the trenches with it right now, I've learned, I feel like I'm just pulling the curtain back. And so that disappearance story, as Meg mentioned, is probably the biggest surprise so far, but I am sure there's going to be much more to come.
Mm-hmm. And I know what kind of surprised me about Stephen King. Well, his commitment to his wife is something that's really interesting to behold. And his book, Lisi's Story, got me really sort of invested in researching his marriage, which I think is really cool. And not something we necessarily think about successful people, but it doesn't always happen that they have a successful marriage. And as well as he had this horrible event happen when he was about 3 years old, which he, in which he saw somebody die, in a pretty extreme way. And so, you have to wonder if that kind of wrote onto the slate of who he is and if that kind of affected what was to come. But either way, I'm glad Stephen King is here and he writes books.
Yeah, I didn't even know about the Agatha Christie disappearance until maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm like, wait, how does this happen? And nobody knows what happened,
yeah.
what has happened yet. I mean, right. You figure details would have come out, you know, towards the end of her life, after her death, you know, somebody says, okay, yeah, I was holding on to these because she told me not to tell anybody until after. But that is like this fascinating. It's just like, yeah, I went walkabout. No big deal.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think we can all understand maybe you just want to drive off for a couple days and go sit in the British countryside. I can't blame her.
So given this breadth of work, what is more fun for you, researching these topics for a nonfiction book or writing fiction?
Oh, I think for me, each has their own path of discovery, because as you're researching for a topic for a book, we don't necessarily know where that's going to lead. And the same thing with fiction writing, when we're writing a screenplay, we will start writing something, we don't know where it's going to go. And then it's that aha moment and it just flows and it comes out.
Yeah. I mean, at the risk of giving a political answer, I think that they both help the other. Like, I think I'm a better fiction writer because of the research I've done. For instance, I wrote a short story collection that came out last year. And I had all the stories be historical because I really like doing historical research. And I wanted to sort of get into some stories that took place, you know, before now that aren't contemporary. And I think I had the confidence to do that because of my research. And also, and then, you know, to bring it back the other way, I think my fiction writing has made it easier for me to sort of find the thread of the story in nonfiction and tell it in a sort of story driven way. So they're both really fun.
And it uses different parts of our brain.
Yeah. I do have to say that the nonfiction books, I work with Kelly on that. And so I get to have that person, that sounding board, and my fiction books, I do alone. And, that can be very boring.
Never underestimate the power of a second brain.
That's right.
So, Meg, Kelly, tell us where we can find you online and on social media and keep track of whatever projects you're working on next.
Sure. We both have our own website. So our names, KellyFlorence.com and MegHoftal.com. We also have our podcast duo website, HorrorRewind.com.
Yep. And you can follow us, Horror Rewind or Kelly Florence or Meg Hoftal on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all the things.
Cool. Well, we will have links to all of that. And I know I am eagerly awaiting both the witchcraft books and the Agatha Christie books.
Awesome.
And I'm going to have to go find that Women in Horror book. I really am.
But for sure.
Meg and Kelly, thank you so, so much for your time and your insights today.
Thank you so much for having us.
This was so fun. Thanks for having us.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, From heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of Einsteins, and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up, because it's story time.
Again, the books are The Science of Witchcraft, which comes out in October, The Science of Agatha Christie, which is due out in 2023. I'm going to look for a copy of The Science of Women in Horror for myself and have some fun with that. Again, the authors are Meg Hafdahl and Kelly Florence. You can find a lot of their work at horrorrewind.com. That's the website for their horror podcast. And we also have links to their individual websites. These seem like a lot of fun. And nonfiction, essay, academic type work in horror, always an entertaining option for me. So I will continue to keep an eye out for these books and more. How about you? What sort of horror-related nonfiction topics do you enjoy? Let me know. Give me a call, 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter, @writeafterdark. That's W-R-I-T-E, after dark. You can listen to Writers After Dark through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you are listening on either Apple or Stitcher, please consider using those platforms to leave us a review or a rating. And you can also do so on Podchaser. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support Writers After Dark and all of the podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal and Ko-fi really do help keep things online around here. So for that, I thank you all very much. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. You can pick a tier, any tier, and become eligible for perks. Every month, I pick an email address out of the hat, and that person gets to choose from a book, a DVD, a Blu-ray, a 4K. A lot of the review materials I get here for all the shows, I can't keep them all. I just don't have the space right now. So, supporters and listeners get first dibs at some really cool books and box sets. And if you'd prefer just to donate every now and then, the links to use are Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi, or paypal.me/scifisummer. And again, thank you all for supporting and listening. That'll do it for this episode. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.